Yeah, let's go. Let's get started.
Last session of the day. And tonight, this is a soccer stadium.
Yep.
All right. Welcome again to the last session of Day 2 of Tech Ed. My name is Chuck Heinzelman. I am a senior program manager with Microsoft on the BPD CX team.
What?
It's a bunch of letters, isn't it? BPD is Business Platform Division. We build SQL Server and other products. CX is Customer Experience. Who has ever heard of the SQL CAT team? Okay. SQL CAT is part of the CX organization.
So you're in charge of SQL CAT?
No, I'm not in charge of SQL CAT. I work alongside SQL CAT. I work with them quite often, actually.
Oh, Thomas LaRocque, technical evangelist for Compio Software. That's about all you need to know from me.
That is about all you need to know from him. I've known him for years.
That's it.
So, what are we here to talk about? We're here to talk about Windows Server Core and SQL Server, and naturally along with that goes PowerShell. Okay? We're going to spend, I put this slide up early because whenever I'm doing speaker coaching and teaching people how to go out and give presentations, I always give them the advice to invite people to leave. It's not a rude thing, it's a polite thing. Your time is valuable. If this is not what you're expecting to get out of, I want to tell you up front, and if it's not what you're expecting to get out of the session, you might want to spend your time in a different session. Well, what we're going to do is we're going to spend about 30 minutes or so talking about Windows Server Core and how to install SQL Server on Windows Server Core, and we will then kick off an install of SQL Server. While that's running, Tom is going to take over and talk for about 30 minutes on using PowerShell commands to administer your SQL Server instances. Then when he's done, we'll come back to me. I will, hopefully, that SQL Server install will be done by then. It will. Don't worry. And then we will go into actually configuring an always-on availability group entirely through PowerShell, a three-server availability group setting all through PowerShell. Okay? So that's what we're going to be doing today. You saw me. I'm out on Twitter as SQL Boy Wonder, but I hardly ever tweet. If you want to get in touch with me, it's chuck.heinzelman@microsoft.com.
It's me. I am on Twitter as a SQL Rockstar, and I sometimes tweet, so you can find me there. I also sometimes blog at thomaslaroc.com, and you can reach me, sqlrockstar@thomaslaroc.com.
And for those of you who don't know what the MVP program is,
oh, yeah.
Tom is a SQL Server MVP with Microsoft. It's individuals in the community that we recognize for their contributions to the community. Not employees. I was a SQL MVP before I joined Microsoft and had to give up the award when I joined because you cannot be a Microsoft employee and an MVP. But they are people in the community that we value and trust for their independent opinions. They don't always agree with us. And trust me, they do argue. Anyway, why would you want to run Windows Server Core for SQL 2012?
I know.
Oh. It's more secure. A core operating system is going to be more secure just because you have a smaller surface area. You don't have an Explorer shell running. You don't have all of the other ancillary tools installed and configured and running that add to a surface attack vector. It's that right there makes it more secure. There's less to attack. One thing that scares people away is the command line interface. And believe me, I don't like command lines. I didn't like command lines either. I gave up command lines 20 years ago when I stopped using AIX. I used to write C code in the VI editor. I gave up command lines after I got out of that job. Okay? This is different. We'll talk more about that a little bit later. So since you have a smaller surface area, you have less to patch. I have some empirical evidence from a friend of mine who did some tests. We'll talk about that later, but there is less to patch in a core operating system. Your downtimes are less because it's less to do. You will often see this in... Are you taking a picture
again? Yeah, just taking a picture of you.
Thank you. You will often see this in Windows Update, saying that this doesn't necessarily affect this version of Windows when you're running Core. This one, I don't have any proof behind this. It's potentially possible that you could maybe get better performance running Core because there's less stuff running in your operating system. Never been proven. Just hasn't. And even if there is, it's not going to be a significant game changer. Okay? So that's not going to be a reason to go to server core. That is not. So what are some of the barriers? Well, it's different, isn't it? Well, not really. It's still a Windows operating system. Right now, Windows Server 2008 R2, Windows 7, you can do a lot of the stuff you need to do from a command line. You just don't because you have a graphical interface. With 2012, Windows Server 2012, that is, coming out, I don't know when. I don't have dates, so don't ask. There is somewhat of a graphical interface that you can enable, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. Well, we can't go to it because it's not a standard that we have. Well, is the base operating system a standard? Is Windows Server 2008 R2 a standard in your environment? If it is, why couldn't Core be? Again, the only difference is that you don't have a graphical user interface. And there's less to patch. So why not? This one is, for many people, the biggest issue. The fact that you don't have command line and PowerShell skills. You know what I say to this, though? Why are you logging into the server to administer it anyway? What is there, other than initial configuration, that you need to do actually on the server? That you can't do through some sort of remote management interface.
Launch Task Manager.
Fair enough, but you can look at perfmon over the wire.
Yes, you can.
But you can, virtually anything other than the initial configuration, you can do through remote management tools. And should. I would argue you should.
Absolutely.
The only time you should be on that box is when you have a server down issue or for your initial configuration. I would argue that's about the only time you should be logged into a server. Yes? Even remote desktop sessions. With some of the remote administration tools, there's no reason to be logged in through a remote desktop session. You can open MMC and load your snap-ins and have them point to different servers very easily. This one, there is no answer to. There's no direct upgrade path from a GUI operating system to a core operating system. So this one, yeah, that's an issue. But again, when I was doing this in an IT department, we usually didn't upgrade our operating systems. We usually wiped clean and started fresh, often because we had hardware upgrades associated with it. So we'd retire old hardware, bring new hardware online with a new operating system. Or if we really wanted to reuse that hardware, we would often wipe it and start fresh. Oh, one other thing that I forgot to mention, I don't know if Tom feels this way, and you know what? I kind of don't care. No, just kidding. If you have questions, please ask them at the time that they come up. Because I'd rather take it in context. I might say we're going to get to that and deal with it later, but I'd rather have the question come up at the time.
I agree with that. Can you believe it?
Oh, man. Take back what I just said. Yeah. Ignore it. I don't want to make Tom happy. No, just kidding. This is the empirical test, and I have to thank my friend Alan Hurt, who is a clustering MVP. He did this test. What he did, he said, I want to see what the real difference is between server core and a full GUI operating system. So on May 8th, happened to be a Tuesday, so Patch Tuesday, he created two VMs. One of them was Windows Server 2008 R2 SP1, full OS, no patching, enabled .NET 3.5.1, and installed SQL 2012 on both of them. So there was one full, one core. Then he installed SQL 2012 on them, no patches, just the core database engine.
Okay.
Here's what he found. The disk footprint, dramatically smaller for the core OS. So you're going to save on storage costs by going with a core OS. Then he looked at patching. 48 selected, 50 available for recommended and important on the full OS, down to 37 for server core. A 45% savings among all patches for server core. So right here, the empirical evidence to say that a core operating system is going to cause you less patching. And less patching means less work and less downtime.
So Chuck.
Yes, sir.
If I read it right, you're telling me that after SQL's installed, is that 9.8?
That is 9.8 gig.
So it's roughly 2.8 for the SQL install for the regular GUI-based one, right?
Yes, sir.
And it was 2.7 for the core. In other words, everything you need is there.
Yes, sir.
I mean, everything the footprint for SQL isn't smaller. You get your savings on the Windows. But for SQL, if you're worried about functionality missing, I mean, it's all there.
Yeah, and this is your core engine. You're going to be able to connect up to it from remote management tools. SQL Server Management Studio from any client is going to be able to connect to that server and administer your SQL side of it. For administering the services, you can connect computer management and the SQL Server Configuration Manager to that and run it through WMI. So it's all accessible for you. And you can do a lot of it through PowerShell. So, what do we need for SQL Server to support Windows Server Core? We need Windows Server 2008 R2 with SP1 or later. SQL Server or Windows Server 2012, not an issue. It's not out yet.
When does it come out, Chuck?
I don't know. But, okay, now that you mentioned that, Windows Server 2012 is not out yet. Does everyone in this room realize that SQL Server 2012 has shipped? Okay. I've run into some people over the course of this week and at the last tech ed I was at that didn't realize that. So I wanted to make it clear, yes, SQL Server 2012 is a live product, has been since April 1st. Yes, we released on April Fool's Day.
Good times.
The only version of SQL Server that's supported on a core operating system is SQL Server 2012. Okay. No 32-bit, which isn't a big deal because Windows Server 2008 R2 is no 32-bit. Here's a link to the features that are supported. Basically, the core engine analysis services, the server parts of SSIS, reporting services is not supported. Basically, anything that requires a graphical user interface, put it someplace else. When you're installing the operating system, You got a lot of choices in 2008 R2. You just want to pick the core installation. Server 2012 is a little different right now because we only have data center because we're in preview. But there is a big difference here. With 2008 R2, core was, in essence, there were different things that were done in the install. With Windows Server 2012, and I will show you this in a demo, you can take a core instance and you can add the graphical user interface back. The graphical interface is a Windows feature. Ooh. You can add it, you can take it away. So there's another thing that can drop your barrier to entry. If you don't feel comfortable with the initial setup and configuration of a server in core, you can install it with a full GUI, get it configured, get it up and running, then remove the feature that gives you the GUI interface, and you are running a core operating system. Okay? Another bit of ammunition to take away that barrier to entry. This is what I was just talking about. We also have a new middle layer that's called MinShell. It gives you limited graphical user interface. You're still predominantly command line, but you can launch MMC consoles and that type of thing. Most of the environment that I live in during this demo will be MinShell. We still don't have the whole worked out how SQL Server is going to be supported in that, you know, can go graphical, cannot. It's still being worked out. Watch for that to come through like MSDN and books online. For Windows Server failover clusters, there is a GUI management payload that you can load. If you load what I learned in preparing this demo, if you are in GUI mode and load the GUI management tools for a failover cluster or for failover clustering, and then you switch down to server core, it actually uninstalls the GUI for the failover clustering. So when you go back up to MinShell, you don't have the MMC console anymore. You have to add it back if you want it. Just something to watch out for. You will need to enable remote management with 2008 R2. Unbind protocols, networking issues. There's also, how many people are familiar with sconfig? Okay, I'll show sconfig real quick then in the demo. It's a nice environment for doing a lot of the network configuration that without PowerShell. Okay. So, on a full OS, you have to install .NET Framework 3.5.1 yourself when you're installing SQL Server. Okay? You have to do it. It's going to block you if you don't. In a core OS, it's going to do it for you. But there's a caveat to this. It has to be able to get to it. It's not on the SQL Server media. So it's going to try to either go out to the internet for it, or you have to, what I would suggest is if you have your Windows media, do an install Windows feature with the source switch and point it to the Windows media, install it on your own before you install SQL Server. Because I, again, in planning this demo, had an installation fail. I did everything I was supposed to. Oh, I forgot to install .NET, and it wasn't connected to the internet and couldn't download it.
I think we have a question.
Yes. How do the system center guys? Well, okay, the question is how if system center is doing the work. What I would suggest is get your system centers in their get them in their sysprepped images to include it. That's what I would suggest, because then you don't have to do anything with it. Or if they don't, at least have them in the image, include the binaries. Because if the binaries are on disk, it'll be able to find them. It's just when they aren't on disk and it has to go someplace for it, then it gets a little confused. Okay. Ah, I have more slides than I thought I had. I got to cruise through these. I normally don't like slideware. Those of you who have been in my presentations, I am very atypical Microsoft. I don't like slides.
But that's the .NET error that you saw?
No, that's not it. Windows Server failover clustering, because always on depends on the failover clustering components, not to be confused with a shared disk fail cluster instance. A lot of terms there, but it's not a shared disk cluster, but it needs to have the clustering infrastructure. So you need to make sure you install that and include the management tools. More on enabling server core. These are more here for when you download the deck, you have the reference materials, that kind of thing. Cluster.exe has been deprecated. It's not installed by default on server 2012 right now. I don't think with the new version there's anything you can do in Cluster.exe that you can't do in PowerShell. So it will eventually be going away. I don't know when, but it is deprecated. So if you are still using Cluster.exe for anything, I would recommend shifting over to the appropriate PowerShell commands. Automation server, this is used by FileStream. It's not enabled by default, but you will want to enable it if you use FileStream. It's a Windows feature that you can install. The installation of SQL Server, of course, has to be a command line installation, unless you go into GUI mode. I have an installation script I will share with you, and we will talk through it. It's actually not that bad. Well documented in books online what you need to do. I think I have maybe 20 command line switches to get a core engine install. It's not bad. If you do install some of the feature pack tools, there are some dependencies. You can't install the PowerShell extensions before SMO is there because it depends on it, so just make sure you do it in the right order. TCP enabled. Very important because you want to do remote administration. If you don't have TCP enabled, it's going to be a little hard to connect to your server. We also have two new update options. These are kind of a replacement for the slipstreaming functionality that we had in the past. You can specify that you have an update download, like a CU, that you want to include in the install through these command line switches. And those work with the regular installer as well. All right, let's get out of PowerPoint land.
All right.
What I have here is Windows Server Core. I have two Windows Server Core instances running. I have a third with SQL Server installed. I have a third that is waiting to be connected to the network and have SQL Server installed on it. So what I will do is move this out of the way.
Good idea.
The first thing I'm going to do, I just want to show this to you. Oh. Helps to start PowerShell before you run a PowerShell command. So what this command is doing, the install Windows feature, server GUI management infra, this is going to take us to what we call min shell. Okay. Min shell is where you can run certain MMC consoles, certain things. It's not a full shell. It does expand your surface area a little bit, but it's not all the way up to a full Windows Explorer. Now, if you installed the core operating system first, you will need to tell it when you're installing this where to get the bits from. It's either going to be downloaded off the internet or it's going to try and get it from the DVD. In this case, I had already installed it, so I had the bits there. So if I restart this instance, what it's going to do is it's going to go through and do the configuration. When it comes back up, it's going to launch into MinShell. Now, since I've taken a little longer than I wanted to going through the slides, I'm not going to go all the way to full shell. But know that if I would run the full shell command, which is, you can kind of see it in Notepad behind me, the server feature, server GUI shell, that takes you to full shell. So then to get back to MinShell, you remove server GUI shell. And to get back to core, you remove server GUI management infra. So it's just different steps taking you from core to MinShell, MinShell to full, full back to MinShell, MinShell back down to core. So yeah, and these are the commands, like, so install Windows feature, server GUI shell, remove Windows feature, server GUI shell, so on and so forth. So when this is almost done, so I'll just let it run. And of course, it'll probably stall now. There we go. So what it's going to do is it comes into the core, but then it also launches Server Manager. And you can see here under Tools, we've got a bunch of MMC snap-ins that we can use here. And what I'm going to do real quickly, because I want to show this, is I'm going to add back the clustering tool set for the user interface, just because I want to show when we add the node through. Trying to talk and do at the same time. When we add the node through PowerShell for the new server, that we have all the clustering available to us. So the failover cluster management tools, and we can let that run in the background. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to my Core DB3. Now this machine, like I said, is a install of Windows Server Core, has .NET 3.5.1 installed on it, and nothing else done to it. IP addresses haven't been set, hasn't been renamed, hasn't been joined to the network, nothing. Okay? So we're going to do that all real quick here. The first thing is we're going to look at the network adapters. We're going to launch PowerShell, then we're going to look at the network adapters. So we see that we have one network adapter named Ethernet. I want to rename that. So we will rename it to public network. We're then going to give it a new IP address. And one thing with this new IP address command, you're going to need to work up the prefix length instead of your subnet masks. So this is a 255.255.0.0 subnet. And then I'm going to set my DNS server. Okay, our network is now configured. Now if we had wanted to, I could have used sconfig. In this tool, you can go in and do a lot of this stuff. You can change server name, you can add, join the domain. You can do this through here if you aren't comfortable with the PowerShell commands. And this is available, you know, this is a pure core instance. So this is available here. You don't need to go to MinShell or full shell to get this. So I'm going to go back into PowerShell. And the first thing I'm going to do is rename my computer. And what it did is we had the restart computer command line switch there. So it did the rename, and it automatically did a reboot. And
yeah, that was fast.
You can see how fast this operating system is going to boot. It's ready. So without all that extra overhead, our reboots are actually fairly quick. Takes longer to type my password.
I think you need a longer password. I'm not sure that's secure enough.
So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually join it to the domain. Oh my gosh, there's graphics.
Well,
yes, there are graphical parts of Core. You can run Notepad in Windows Server Core. There are certain pieces that you can do. It's just not a full graphical shell. The mile-long password, reboot. When this comes back up, then we'll go down the next set of things.
We don't have to type in that password, do we?
Yes. So now the next thing I'm going to do is, this is definitely a case of do as I say, not as I do. This is a test environment. This is a secured lab. It's all running locally, no connectivity to the internet. I'm going to disable all my firewalls just to make it easy for demo purposes. If this were a real environment, I would say you open the appropriate holes in your firewall, not just turn it off. Okay? So, that being said, let me go disable my firewall.
We're in demo mode. Just say I'm in demo mode. Right? You can't remember that password, can you?
Couldn't remember my username. I should just hook it up to my smart card.
Yeah, you should. Yeah. Time for that fingerprint.
So, again, set net firewall profile all enabled false.
There you go.
Let's go into the wild blue yonder. So the next thing I want to do is I want to, because we're going to be doing always on, this needs to be part of a Windows cluster. I have an existing Windows cluster that I'm going to add this to. So I'm just going to type my clipboard text. And the last thing I did, I'll actually show it over here. I have include management tools. Now, since we are in a core operating system, what this is going to do is going to add the PowerShell tools for clustering. If we were in a graphical operating system, it would actually add more of the tool set. So the next thing is just join this to the cluster. So we get the cluster core demo, and this is a cool feature of PowerShell, the pipe. What the pipe does is the output of what's to the left of the pipe becomes the input to what's the right of the pipe. So the output of get cluster is the cluster object. So to that cluster object, I want to add a cluster node named core-db3. I didn't have to tell add cluster node which cluster to add it to. I could have on the command line, but I didn't have to because it took the output of the pipe and added it to the appropriate cluster. And then the next thing is to install SQL Server. So I need to make sure that my SQL Server media is attached. So come in here, grab my SQL Server media. Okay, I have a bunch of batch files that I will just run one of.
You have a directory named Tom?
Yes, I do.
That's odd.
No, because I had your scripts in it before we decided to use your machine instead. So what this is going to do is it's going to install SQL Server. And you can see there a very complicated command line. And more graphics are going to show up. So let me just show you real quick what this looks like. Let me run it from a different machine. Can you tell us the end of the day?
I am impressed with the amount of typing you're doing in a live demo. You're doing fabulous. Much better than I would have ever done. Never type in a demo, by the way. Never. Something will always go wrong.
Well, and it does.
But you're brilliant.
What I have here is I just call setup.exe. The first switch is /QS, which is not a full quiet. It's a limited quiet. So you'll see, as we're going here, we've got stuff going on in the background, but we see the installer shell running by. You can't interact with it. You just see it. Okay? Action is install. Features, I list out the SQL engine. I tell it I want the English edition. I give it an instance name. I tell it the service account and password and startup type for agent, for SQL Server Engine. I do the same thing for agent. How do I want the browser service? Do I want it to be manual or automatic? SA password and my security mode, being either Windows or SQL. What accounts do I want added to the SQL administration or to the sysadmin role? So you can kind of see it walking through the user interface installer here. Name pipes enabled equals 0, TCP enabled equals 1. So I've got TCP but no name pipes. I accept SQL Server license terms, very important, otherwise it will not install. Indicate progress is true, so I have progress going through the window. Do I want to do the SQM reporting, so uploading usage? No. I don't have update enabled. I do not have error reporting enabled, and that's it. Run this. Install SQL Server. So with that, I'm going to switch over to Tom and let him do his thing. Yes?
Oh, question.
This is a named instance. Yes. Where I said instance name demo 1, this is a named instance.
Okay.
I believe you put in MSSQL server or whatever our default instance name is. So.
All right. So we're going to come over to mine. So while that's installing, what we'll do is we'll pretend that I'm actually connected to a server core installation, because guess what? It's the same thing as if you were using Management Studio with a full-blown install. So let me figure out who's in my audience here. How many people here use Management Studio on a regular basis? Lots. Wonderful. Wait, keep those hands up. How many of you are DBAs? Oh, you're the best. So who else is in the room? Developers or sysadmins? Yeah? Okay. All right, so next question is, as DBAs, Management Studio, how many of you people are also very familiar with PowerShell? So just a handful. So most people here are probably like me and just are either fearful of the PowerShell or just don't see a need to use it yet. So when PowerShell first came out, I had all my own scripts for things. All right, I was a production DBA for 7 years. I had plenty of scripts for just about anything I would need. But when PowerShell came out and I was still using either a bash file or even SQL command, when it came out, I didn't see a need for me to just start rewriting all my stuff simply because PowerShell was now available. Right? There had to be something for me to say, now I need it. I finally found it very recently when PowerShell, when 3.0 came out. And when I show you, I think you're going to find it a little bit better for you to get some stuff done. Now with Server Core, you have to now think about things in a little bit different way. So Management Studio is how you're going to connect to Server Core. You're not going to be on the box. You're just going to connect remotely like I am here. And you can also use PowerShell to do just about everything you need. So I'm going to walk you through a few things. So if you're already familiar with Management Studio, you know there's a directory-like structure, right? So if you're not, that's what it looks like. So you see your databases, security, server objects. So you just think of that as folders, just like in Windows Explorer, and you can drill in, so on and so forth, right? So this was my impression of PowerShell, which is all the stuff that you've seen from Chuck, is that I would have to get into here, and I would run that, and now I'm in PowerShell, and now what, right? Here, hey, there's PowerShell. How great is that, right? And you hear all these people telling you, oh, PowerShell is the best thing ever. Look what I got. Yeah, look what I got in that screen. I got a big old nothing. Now what do I do with it? And there's that learning curve. Like I said, I'm not going to rewrite all my scripts just because I can. But over here, meet your new PowerShell. This is the 3.0 ISE, and I actually, I'll even show you how to download it. I put it on a piece of notepad, so if you want to write this down or take a picture or something real quick, go to tinyurl.com/posh30, okay? And that's how you're going to download that new ISE, nice and shiny. I can put that back up for you at the end. How much time do you need for the AG at the end? 10?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is wonderful because what I get now, this is the first thing what I did. This is probably the first thing what everybody does with PowerShell. Ready? Watch this. Get.
Ooh. Help.
But before I even got to the H, did we see what happened just there? A little bit of IntelliSense, right? So now I get help. Oh, it's going to ask for the calendar. Oh, I didn't want to press that. But the IntelliSense is what I wanted to show you. Now you're actually getting help within the product without having to do get help, have all that text scroll by you, and you go, wait, which was the part I needed? You're going to get a lot more information. Over here on the right is this command, the command window, right? Watch this. What if I wanted to do a backup of a SQL database? Oh, so show the details. What's down here? All the commands are going to come with it. Oh, or did I jump ahead? Give it a second. Oh, I can't spell. Mm-hmm. All right. Let me jump over it, make sure I'm loaded into the mini shell, so backup SQL database. As soon as that comes in, yeah, I forgot. I have to bring in the SQL PS. So I'm importing the SQL PowerShell module, so that way I can actually see the commands here. Yep. So if I go like this now, if I say show details, it should come back. There we go. So these are all, so if I wanted to do this now, so check this out. Venture Works 2012. So here's my screen down here. Can everybody see that, by the way? I know I'm going kind of fast, and I could go back and forth on Zoom if you need it, but if you can't see it, let me know.
Should Chuck be able to zoom the whole UI at the bottom.
I can. Thank you.
At least that
part I can
of UI.
At least get that. Yeah, I can get that at least. So over here, I put in AdventureWorks 2012. Ready for this? This little button that just says insert right down there. Insert. Look what it just gave me. Gave me the syntax I need. Okay? Now, that's not bad. And there's a whole bunch of other things in here, right? All the other options you get with a backup. But what if, you know what, if I just didn't know anything and I just went like this and dash, oh, maybe I want to initialize each of my backups. So I can go just like that. Now, actually, I forgot one thing. Let me undo what I've done. Oh, that was pretty cool. Let me look at this. Where am I right now? Oh, you know what I need to do? I need to actually go to my instance. So let me connect to SQL, change my directory, and I can navigate just like you were doing in Management Studio. This is exactly what PowerShell is. It's just a folder-like structure. You can just navigate your way in. So you're right. You see I'm in one machine name. I can do SQL. Oh, wait. I knew I was typing something wrong. And I can connect out to my machine name, and then I can go to my instance name, Humble. And now, if I do that backup command, initialize, now my backup is running. So no more fooling around inside of that old style command window. I'm actually getting some help. I can actually see the information. There's help with the command text. I see what the properties are. There's a lot of little features in there to kind of guide me to what you need to do. So now you start thinking, what are the things I'd really want to do with this?
Okay. That just seems a lot more friendly than even doing it in T-SQL.
Oh, well. Now, the good news is, in case you are wondering, you can still launch a PowerShell right from Management Studio as well. So this is one of the ways that I used to use PowerShell, is I would come in here and I would kind of launch. And then I would navigate and I would look for things. But you're not going to get that same feel over in the ISE. And this thing's going to take a few seconds to connect. We don't need to wait for that. So what I really want to do, so I just did a backup of one database, right? So now we start getting into different things. Well, you know what? Backing up one database, that was good. But what if I wanted to back up all databases? So what you saw Chuck earlier, he said there's the pipe command. You know, I was going to mention the pipe command. That's okay.
Sorry.
Chuck already did. So I can take... So there's all the databases, right? Did this come back yet? So that's where I am, the databases. So if I do a dir, I get back the list of four databases. Very familiar. Not graphical, but very familiar. The four databases, just like you see in Management Studio if you expanded the databases node. Okay. So that's what this is, right? From here, I'm just going to get all of the databases that exist in that directory. I'm going to pipe that to the backup command. It's that simple. I run that, and they kick off. And with this, we actually get a nice little progress bar as well. So that's not bad. Again, though, I'm not going to just convert to PowerShell simply because I can run these backup commands. There has to be a little bit more for me to do. So you think you have to administer these servers, and they're running on server core. Well, what are some of the other things you might want to do? Oh, let's give this a second. This should be done in a second. So, Chuck.
Yes, sir.
What are some of the other things you might want to do for as a DBA? What's your number one thing you have to do?
Take a nap.
Take a nap. What's your number two thing? How, but you can rest easy because?
Because I'm running always on.
Because you're running always on? Or are you doing your backups? Your backups are done. What are some of the other things you might want to do? Think administration. Think,
well, backups,
oh, I don't know.
I really want to know if I can restore.
You want to know if you can restore is right. So we've done that. Something else. You want to make sure all your databases are set to auto-shrink?
I want to make sure they're set to auto-shrink.
Do you?
No.
Well, you know what you can
do? I want to make sure they're set to not auto-shrink.
Well, did you know how many people here use policy-based management? Nobody. Two people. Did you get a count of that?
Two.
SQL Cat, right? Community? All right, good. Two people in here are using policy-based management. The rest of you should start thinking about policy-based management. If you aren't, so the two people raised their hands. Did you know there were a lot of default policies that ship with SQL Server? You did know that. Does anybody else know that? Do you know where they're buried? They're buried in this directory. Program files, SQL Server, 110 tools, policies, database engine, 1033. Real easy to find, right? But there's a whole bunch of these things that are listed there. One is the database auto-shrink policy. So if I need to administer, if I was just curious about my environment, in my case, I had 180 instances, right, to administer. See, Microsoft is good at giving me a tool that can administer one instance of SQL, and that's Management Studio. They're really lousy at helping me administer 180 of them at once until things like PowerShell came along. So now I can simply get connect, go, hey, false. I think I have a database that's actually set to auto-shrink. Maybe I should go and look at that one. So now I'm going to go one step further, though, because connecting to one instance is one thing. What I really want to do is I want to be able to connect to multiple instances at once. So that's what I have here. I have that same command down here. But what appears, I'm going to scroll through, and where's the text file located? I'm going to scroll through a servers.txt file. So I have that out here. I'll show you what that looks like. All I've done is put in the machine name and the instance names right into a text file. So if you had a manual list of this, you could just have those, you know, kept somewhere. If you're using something like a central management server, you can dynamically pull this information out from your CMS and populate a file like this. So I'm just going to use this file. Why not? I have two instances on my machine. One's a SQL Express. So now when I run this, it's going to connect to each one of those, and it's going to come back and say, oh, looks like I have a false for the instance Hambone, and I have a true for SQL Express. Looks like my SQL Express instance is all good, but I do have a problem with possibly with one database or more set to auto-shrink in the other instance. So now I start thinking like this. All right, now I have a way to connect to multiple instances at once. Just pipe in, I get the information from that text file, and I can start applying different things. So now I start thinking about different types of scripts as a DBA that I would have. All right, so let's do this. Here's one. So let me ask you, how much memory should you assign to an instance of SQL Server? I got a lot of DBAs in here. How much instance? All. Wow. All that's available. Let's say I have 8 gigs of memory. How much would you give it to?
Six.
Okay. So I have a friend, Jonathan Cahias, who writes about what the general guideline would be. And he says something like roughly 1 gig reserved for the first 4 gigs of memory, then a couple of gigs up to about 16, and then X number of gigs after that. So I put that into a little T-SQL script, actually, which I have right here. Check mem. I have just this little T-SQL script that just goes out and says, oh, I can go to a DMV and get information about my instance, the memory assigned to my box and for SQL Server as well. Now, here's the thing. There's actually two different versions because for SQL 2012, it does, is this the one pre? In pre, it's physical memory in bytes. But for its 2012 instance, it was physical memory KB. So I was lazy, and I said, you know, I could probably figure out how to make it dynamic all in one. You know what? I'm just going to make two scripts, because I'm probably going to have other instances out there I might want to check. I'm just going to make two scripts, and then I can find out what's the version of SQL Server I have. So now I have the ability with PowerShell to simply connect to an instance and say, by the way, what version are you? If you're this version, go and run that script over there. So I do that, and I can come back. Now, in this case, I've got 8 gigs of memory. You know what comes back? That's the max I would assign is 5 gigs. 5120, so 5 gigs, because I'm going to leave up to 3. That's as general guideline, right? Not an absolute. I think that gentleman knows what I'm saying. It's just a general guideline to start with. You adjust from there. But it's a nice thing to know. If this came back and said, hey, by the way, you're running at 6 gigs, but really the max probably should maybe be 5, that might be something as a DBA you'd like to look into. Am I having any issues with memory on that server? So I can highlight that pretty quickly with all these instances, all right? So, you know, that's not bad, but let's think about this a different way. So besides just memory, memory is one of many configuration options for SQL Server, right? Anybody know how many you have? All right, make it easy. How many rows in sysconfigs? What? How come nobody knows this? I was going to give out the bar of bacon soap to the person who told me. So we can do the same thing. I can go into sysconfigs, and I can figure out exactly. Let me show you the script I have here. Check defaults. What I have here is a script that simply says, I know what the default values are for all of these. Oops, didn't want to do that. Wanted to do this. So I know that for priority boost, the default value is 0. That's actually, I'm pretty sure, for every version of SQL Server. So that's why it's in here like that. All right, that's good to know. Now, what I'd like to see more of is what instances have non-default values. So, of course, I'm hoping you're going to come back and find out that your memory settings have non-default values. That would be one thing. But what else? Oh, I see I have an instance here that has XP Command Shell enabled. That's good to know. Maybe you're not supposed to be having that. So besides things like policies, it's probably just an idea for you to think about, well, what is it I want to know about today? So whenever you're working with one instance of SQL and you need to know a piece of information, now you have the tools to say, oh, I can just take this, put into a little file over here, and hit all my instances like that right now and get back all the information I need. So once I started getting into things like this, it started realizing how much PowerShell is going to be a lot more useful for me these days. I'm not living in that black command line interface anymore. I got things with actual help, actual information behind it, and I can start thinking about, well, just about anything I need.
And your interface is blue.
My interface is blue. I like blue. So here's another one. So here's something I actually put together a while back. Who here knows about virtual log files? 3, 4 people. How many virtual log files should you have? He's going to say all. As few as possible, right? So let's say you had a database, I don't know, we'll call it SharePoint, that had several thousand VLFs. Might be a concern. Could be a concern for performance, yes, right? I think many VLFs have a definite concern for people who are doing transactional replication, I believe. If you have a lot of VLFs, you can actually see some latency for if you're using some replication. So this is something you might want to look into, especially if you have a large number of virtual log files. All right. So what I have here is a while ago, I put together a script for one particular instance. I said, you know what? Let me just go figure out where all the log files are for all the databases in my instance. Okay. And I put that together. Well, with PowerShell, who in here is a manager? Anyone? Any managers? One manager. You love pretty graphs, don't you?
No, that's
my manager. All right. Well, your manager's going to like this. Because now, I'm taking all this information, it's good in that little blue screen, right? But you know what would be better? It would be better if I could actually share that blue screen with somebody else. Well, how can I do that? You know what I could do? Is I could put all this information into a spreadsheet. But, of course, his manager needs a prettier graph. He can understand the raw data. But his manager needs something more like, I don't know, a big old pie chart that simply says VLF count. And who can't understand that, right? I mean, I have the raw data here, but I was able to put it into Excel, but Excel's just an object. PowerShell can write to and create an Excel object. It can also create a chart inside that Excel object. So this would be great. I could write and send this off to my manager. Okay, or my manager's manager, right? Let's not save that. So, last one. Let me come down a little bit. So now this is a script from Alan White. If you're not familiar with Alan White, you should be, especially if you're doing something with PowerShell. Man has a wealth of information and experience when it comes to this type of level of scripting and what you can do with SQL Server. This is something he published out at SimpleTalk a few years back. I talked to him. He said he wanted me to show it here, and I'm happy to do so. Now, all he does is he has a couple of functions in here. He has a function where he goes to get some WMI info. He has a function to get some SQL info. What's he going to do here? It looks like spconfigure, spwho, splock. Okay. He's going to build some tables. I start to see some CSVs. He's going to put some error logs together, a list of targets. He's got pretty much all the same information that we've actually seen and built up. But here's the good stuff, right here, the configure, the who, the lock. He's going to put that into a CSV file. When I run this, right, so Alan's the type of guy that he gets a call and somebody says, I need your help. Will you come on site? You know, he's a consultant, right? Come on site, I need your help. But a lot of times, he can't bring his tools necessarily with him. I don't know about you. I worked in an environment where you weren't just going to walk in and install anything you needed in our environment. You were going to have to help us, but you're going to have to use the stuff that we had. Well, PowerShell is most likely one of the things you have. So I can walk in there with a thumb drive, and I can execute a script. And as long as I have permissions to connect to the SQL instances, I'm going to get the information I need. Okay. So he can do that. And then he comes up, and he gets this folder. See? Looks familiar. He's got folders here. I can get information. Oh, there's my AdventureWorks data file. I can open up Excel. There's the information I need. So with one button, he can press one button. He comes back with all this information, error log information, things like that. He can give the script. He can say, here, run this, get the information, zip it up, send it back to me, and I can examine all these CSV files. Now how much would you pay? I mean, by now, I'm sold. I can just think about all the different things that I can use PowerShell for, especially if I'm going to be in Server Core. There's just no doubt in my mind I'm going to want to deploy. I'm going to want to start thinking more about PowerShell and the information I can get out of SQL and start converting some of those scripts.
And helps to turn the microphone on. Let me tell you, when I was building this demo that I did here, I was amazed at how much time it saved me once I figured out all the different PowerShell commands. It's just so much less time-consuming to type this command and let it run than to go through a graphical user interface. I sold myself on it. I was, you know, skeptical at first. I like my graphical interfaces. So,
is your stuff ready?
Yeah, absolutely. And I will be 100% honest. I had some problems while Tom was talking.
Most people have problems when I talk.
The install script failed twice.
Nice.
So I did 3 full SQL Server installs in the time that he was talking. Two of them with rollbacks.
Are you saying I talk a lot?
No. What happened was, in my install script, I had 2 user accounts to be added to the sysadmin group. The problem is, one of them was in a domain that the domain controller wasn't running. So, I just removed that from the install script and reran it. I didn't need it. So where we stand right now is we have Core DB3 with SQL Server installed. I'm going to go over to one of my machines that has a full graphical interface and Management Studio. And you can see here, I am connected to Core DB3 Instance Demo 1. Doesn't have any databases. Doesn't have any... Ooh, it doesn't even have Always On enabled. Okay? So, now if you're remotely administering this, how would you get at the service properties to change that? Well, your first inclination is probably to come to SQL Server Configuration Manager on whatever machine you're running and connect up to that other machine. And connect up to that other machine. Not from here, but you can do it on this machine. what I need to do is I'm going to run mmc/a. Slash A takes me into administrative mode. I'm going to add the snap-in for computer management. When I add this, it asks me what machine I want to go after. Say another computer, core DB3. Voila, there it is. As long as I have the permissions, I can come after this machine. So if I go under services and applications, I see configuration manager. I can choose the properties of this, and I can see here that, yes, it is part of the right cluster, because I did that through PowerShell, but always on is not enabled. Well, I'm not going to do it through here, of course. This is a PowerShell session. So we're going to come back into the server core instance, start PowerShell, enable SQL always on. Uh-oh.
Red's bad.
Well, kind of. Red isn't always bad. Red is informative.
Oh.
It makes you take notice. What this is saying is I don't have the SQL PS module imported, the same issue that Tom ran into before.
It happens.
So I will import module SQL PS. Easy enough. Importing the module. Once that's done, I'll be able to run my enable. Uh-oh. That's not good. Now what's wrong? Running scripts is disabled on this system. More security. So what I'm going to do now is run the set execution policy to remote signed. This will allow me to import that signed script. So now I import the module. And this one should work. The one thing I did do to this machine after I installed SQL is I rebooted it. So now we have, you see, the PS SQL server. So I should be able to run the enable always on. And that path is which SQL server instance I'm going to. So SQL being the root, core DB3 the server name, demo 1 the instance name. Yes, I want to restart SQL server. Now one thing to know here. This is going to restart SQL Server, not Agent. It stops Agent. So stop Agent, stop SQL Server, start SQL Server, done. So if you use this command, know that you're going to have to restart Agent. But if I come back in here, I can now see that my availability groups are now enabled for this server. So we could have done it either way. Who in this room has done work with Always On? A couple people. There's a lot of steps that go into Always On. Okay? You have to back up your databases. You have to restore your databases on the other machines. You have to create your endpoints. You have to grant the rights to your endpoints, to your service accounts. There's a lot that goes into it. In Management Studio, there's a wizard that takes you through the whole thing. But we're talking PowerShell. So this script, from the top of the screen,
whoa,
this whole screen, and that, and that, and all of this, is the PowerShell script. I will walk you through it here, and then we'll just run it, and I'll prove the results out in Management Studio. The first thing it's going to do is going to back up the databases that you want involved from the primary server. It's going to take a full backup and a log backup. And it's going to back it up to a network share that the other servers have access to. Then we restore this database from that share onto the appropriate instance. Note, I'm going to be running this from one machine. But PowerShell is going to allow me to restore the databases onto different machines, no matter where I'm running this from, as long as I have connectivity and the appropriate rights. The next thing we're going to do is create a mirroring endpoint. Yes, it still uses the same endpoint technology we used in database mirroring. So we're by default listening on port 5022. We create mirroring endpoints on all three of the machines. Again, all from one central location. On each server, we need to grant login rights to the service accounts from the other servers. If all of our SQL servers were running as the same service account, we wouldn't need to do this, but I don't recommend doing that.
Is there anybody here who uses one service account for all SQL instances? That guy. Don't be that guy.
No. I fully believe we should be running each service as its individual account.
I agree. Can you believe that's twice?
This is scary. And then it grants connect on the endpoint to each of those logins so that they can communicate with each other over that endpoint. That's critical. We then create three replicas. Now, this is one of my beefs with Always On. The primary database is called a replica, even though it's the main database. Okay? So you will hear us say you can have five replicas of your data. That means you can have a primary and four copies.
Okay? Or four replicas.
You have five replicas. Again, that's why I don't like it. So what we do is we create these replica templates and store them as PowerShell variables. And this is where all of the magic happens. Everything up until now was prep work. All of the magic is in these last five lines. We create a new availability group based on the three replica templates we created, with the primary server being core DB1 demo 1. We then tell core DB2 demo 1 and core DB3 demo 1 to join the AG demo availability group. We then tell core DB2 demo 1 to make the database AG DB1 available as part of that availability group, and we do the same thing on the last server. So we're going to run through this really quick. We'll do these backups and restores. And if you have any questions along the way, this runs for a couple minutes while we're doing it. Feel free to ask questions as we go along. So if there's anyone... No questions. Yes, a question. No. There is no issue with that at all. I personally recommend having static ports. You were trying to do Always On between two instances on the same machine? There could be a problem.
Okay.
I'd have to understand the issue a little more. I'd maybe like to draw this out on a whiteboard. You should still be able to do multiple services on port 1433 as long as you differentiate your IPs. So you're using FCI, not AG. Okay, yeah. Slightly different issue then, yeah.
All right.
Okay, the backups and restores happened successfully. Let's create the endpoints and grant the logins. I like this feature of Hyper-V, where you can tell it to type the commands, and it just types each line for you. I always used to see people doing that, and I never knew how they were doing it. I'm like, how can they type that so fast and so smooth? Then I learned.
How much longer?
A couple minutes.
Oh, really?
Does anyone know any good jokes?
Besides this session.
See, I have jokes that revolve around playing with the English language. I've learned not to use those in an international audience.
Yeah, I'll learn that someday, too.
Yes. Okay, so all of that is done. Now we are going to create our template variables.
Wow, you type fast.
I do.
You should at least pretend.
No, that's when I'm playing a video of me presenting and demoing. I've never done that. Don't. Yeah. So, okay. Now that we've got that, the last couple steps, and like I said, this is where all the magic happens. So we'll run these one by one. So we create the new availability group. And if we go look in the background and refresh this, we can see that it's actually building this stuff out as we go.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the availability group is created. Now we're going to do join availability groups on the two other servers. Now if we come in here, I'll start down here, and we can see that they're being joined. And then we come back into add those last two lines, the two databases. Okay, let's go back into Management Studio. And if we look at the dashboard for this availability group, we can see here we have three replicas. We have a primary and two secondaries. We have one. We have the automatic failover to one secondary. We have manual failover to the second secondary. We have CoreDB1 Demo 1 as the primary. We have CoreDB2 Demo 1 as the synchronous secondary, and CoreDB3 Demo 1 as the asynchronous secondary. So through PowerShell, with those commands, we were able to do all of this. So you can really functionally administer your SQL Server now without the use of a graphical user interface. Yes? How long did it take me to put the PowerShell commands together? A couple hours. But, okay, it took me a couple hours to build it in PowerShell. It would take me a couple of minutes to do it through the graphical user interface. But having it in PowerShell, I can templatize it.
Mm-hmm.
So certain things that you do, if you do them regularly enough in your... In that way, it becomes no different than having a library of T-SQL scripts that you use on a regular basis. You know, you can templatize them. You can, even with a SQL command, you can take input parameters. You can build your PowerShell scripts in such a way that you build them once and use them forever, especially if you are a consultant. I've seen consultants really be able to benefit from this kind of thing where they go into a different shop every week, every 2 weeks. They have a stable of commands that they use over and over. You know, the first thing you want to do is learn what the environment looks like. Well, some of these commands that Tom showed, those are commands that you can use over and over to generate the same data so you have a consistent look across all the environments you work in. Mm-hmm. So it's not for everyone. Yes, if you have the graphical tools remotely, use them. You know, they're great. But if you are in a server down scenario where you are on a server core box, you're going to need the PowerShell skills, at least to get that machine back up and running. You know, I'm still a firm believer that you shouldn't be regularly logging onto a server to do administration on it. You know, you log in to patch, you log in to resolve server down issues, but most of the time you should be in the working either remotely or in a graphical environment from some remote scenario. So with that, we did that demo. We did that demo.
Oh, yeah.
In summary, we're ready today. We're out there. It's been in GA'd for about 3 months. It works. Server core works. You have the lighter footprint. We had the empirical evidence about the patch Tuesday. It just works. It's great. I like it. I'm sold on it. Yeah, I work for Microsoft. I admit that. But I am still a DBA at heart. I still do regular demos and building a lot of things out. And I'm actually starting to build more of my stuff around Server Core. Just because, and especially with Windows Server 2012, where I can install the full GUI shell if I need it and then strip it back to Server Core. It's also a savings on disk space for me, especially when I'm running VMs. So some additional information. You'll have these in the slide deck. This is some great information that my friend Alan Hurt gave us to use. A few sessions here. Where to find us, I'll be working downstairs in the TLC area for the rest of the week. Tom's been there most of this week already. And we've got a lot of experts down there, people from the product group that want to hear from customers. They want to talk to you. Trust me, they want to hear. They need to hear from customers on what your pain points are.
Absolutely.
I also want to just call out Alan Hurt, SQLHA.com is his website. He's a PowerShell and Windows Server genius. He's a clustering MVP. Good friend. He contributed a lot to this session, a lot of the data and a lot of stuff that we used. Some track resources, you can find those later. The big thing I want to point out is evaluations. These events are driven on evaluations. Whether, you know, what speakers we choose, what sessions we choose for future events, that kind of thing. The numbers, whatever you feel is appropriate, is right. What I care about with evaluations is if you liked something that we did, please give us comments on what you liked. If you didn't like something that we did, please give us comments so that we can correct it and make future presentations better. But all in all, it's just, you know, these events thrive on evaluations. So if you can fill out evaluations, that'd be great. Enjoy the stadium tonight. And have a great, we got two more full days of Tech Ed.
Who's playing tonight? And who would want to win? Do we care? Okay.
I'm from the U.S., Green Bay Packers.
I was just curious. I just want to know when I show up what to expect. And if I root for one or the other, I just want to, all right. So, but nobody really cares. All right.
Thanks, everybody.